It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. Nearly 200 Wisconsin police officers who were fired or let go due to misconduct are back in uniform. That's according to a new investigation from the Badger Project. Of the 200, some were fired for more minor reasons, like being a rookie officer who didn't quite make the cut during their probationary period. But others were let go for misconduct, sometimes severe. Our next guest joins us to talk more about that investigation. Now, are you concerned about misconduct? How do you think police departments should handle officer misconduct? How would you like to see, more transparency with hiring? Call 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Peter Cameron is an investigative journalist and the managing editor for the Badger Project. That's a nonpartisan journalism nonprofit that covers Wisconsin state government and politics. Peter, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning.
So let's talk a little bit about this investigation. You used documents from the Wisconsin Department of Justice because it's been keeping data on officers who have been fired or maybe resigned before they were fired since 2017. Now, more than 1,000 Wisconsin officers that have been fired in the last 5 years, around 200 of those have been back on the force. Can you talk about the different reasons for termination?
Sure. Let me just say first that there are about 13,500 law enforcement officers in Wisconsin. And so that 200 that have been fired or forced out, resigned in lieu of termination, that's about 1%, a little bit over 1% of total officers in the state. So the 200 number can sound like a lot, but I just want to put it in context. But some of the reasons, yeah, like you said, a lot of them, when police are hired, they're usually hired they have a probationary period. So the bar to fire somebody early on is very low, kind of like a teacher. And so if they're just not doing a good job, they might get fired. They might be asked to resign. But but they're also, like you said, there was some officers in there that committed misconduct. There was public intoxication. There was there's some officers currently working with DUIs, with DUI convictions, lying to superior officers, sexual harassment, sending photos via phones. So yeah, lots of different reasons.
So, you know, as you just mentioned, some of this could be pretty minor. I believe I read that, you know, rookie officers can be let go even if they're just, you know, for reasons like they're just not really a good fit for the department. But let's talk about some of that more severe misconduct, because you did profile, you know, a few of these officers that had been let go for, you know, having drunken run-ins with the police previously or sleeping in a squad car. Can you talk a little bit about that level of misconduct?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the officers had several run-ins with police before and after he was a police officer. Lots of young men get in trouble in Wisconsin due to alcohol. So one officer was in a couple of bar fights. He was working for New Berlin police, and he was not a stranger to Waukesha police, which apparently is where he was going to the bars. And thrown out of bars, getting punched in the face, things like that. There was another officer who was accused of sleeping on the job. He denies it, but a superior officer accused him of walking up to his squad car, and he said he was fast asleep with a video up on his phone, up on the steering wheel. So the allegation was that he was watching videos while supposed to be patrolling. And then multiple allegations against police officers for male police officers, a lot of times, for sending photos to female police officers, saying inappropriate things to female police officers, a lot of that as well.
We are talking to Peter Cameron right now, investigative journalist and managing editor of the Badger Project. That's a nonpartisan journalism nonprofit that covers Wisconsin state government and politics. And he's with us to talk about an investigation about police officers that were fired or let go that make it back onto police forces. Now, you just mentioned this misconduct that has happened. These officers that we talked about are back on the force. Do police agencies not know about these officers' records, or does it not matter when it really comes down to it?
So the reason I was able to do this story is because Wisconsin keeps track of the Wisconsin Department of Justice flags officers who have been fired, who have resigned in lieu of termination, who have resigned before the completion of an internal investigation. So, I mean, that the fact that the state does that puts us ahead of a lot of other states. Some states don't even track misconduct. But if an officer came from Iowa, was fired in Iowa and came into Wisconsin, or fired from another state, that wouldn't be tracked in this database. I wouldn't know about it. The state wouldn't know about it. There is a national database, but that only tracks decertifications. And decertification, you need your certification to be a police officer, to be a law enforcement officer in Wisconsin. If you're decertified, then you can't do that. And then you're decertified for being convicted of a felony, more higher offenses than the ones we were looking at. There in Congress, there's a George Floyd bill that would do a lot of police reform things, and they want to strengthen the police, this bad cop registry. So that's something that's potentially on the table. It's passed out of the democratically controlled House, but it's sort of stalled in the Senate. But that's something potentially could happen in the future. Let me also talk about, there's a bill in the legislature, a bipartisan bill, that would mandate every law enforcement agency create a personnel file on every law enforcement officer. And they would also have to disclose that personnel file to a new agency that was trying to hire this officer. And that's significant because one thing that law enforcement agencies sometimes have done is that if I'm a police chief, I have an officer I want to fire. If he's protected by the union, if he's off his probationary period, it can be a long process. It can be difficult to do. And so something that law enforcement agencies sometimes will do is they'll make an agreement with that officer. They'll say, all right, if you resign without a fuss, we will seal your personnel file. So if a new employer, potential employer, calls us up and says, you know, we want to hire this person, what can you tell us about them? We'll just say, no, sorry, the file is sealed. So in a sense, protecting that bad officer. So this bill would hopefully prevent that. And again, it's a bipartisan bill, and it passed out of committee on a unanimous vote, both Democrats and Republicans voting for it. It's Republican written in a Republican and majority legislature. So I don't make predictions about these kind of things, but it could pass once the legislature gets back into session after their summer break here.
We are talking to investigative journalist Peter Cameron right now. He's the managing editor of the Badger Project, a nonpartisan journalism nonprofit that covers Wisconsin state government and politics. We're talking about fired police officers who make it back onto the force, and you can join in the conversation now. What would you like to see, learn more about in this issue? What kind of police reform would you like to see? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll take your comments and calls in just a moment. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we continue our conversation about Wisconsin police officers who were fired or let go, who make it back onto the force, sometimes for being a rookie officer that didn't make it during the probationary period, but sometimes also for much more severe misconduct. We're talking about the circumstances that lead to the police being fired and rehired. Our guest right now is Peter Cameron, an investigative journalist and the managing editor of the Badger Project. That's a nonpartisan journalism nonprofit which covers Wisconsin state government and politics, and he recently did an investigation into this issue. And we want to hear from you. Should officers fired for misconduct be allowed to be to work in law enforcement? What bar do you think should be set for these officers once they are rehired? And what questions do you have about this story? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Now, Peter, as part of the article that you wrote about this issue, you talked to a number of policing experts, couple in the state who, you know, took a pretty hardline stance on what should happen with officers, you know, when they're fired for misconduct. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There was one, his name is Patrick Soler. He's a professor at the University of Platte, Wisconsin-Platteville, where they have a criminal justice program. He's also a former, he was in police management. He was a police chief, and he took a pretty hard line on chiefs hiring officers who've been fired. He said if it was for misconduct, he said that should be a death sentence on a law enforcement career. That he said that law enforcement officers should be held to a higher standard than, I don't know, the average person, the average worker. He made a caveat if it was, you know, if it was a rookie officer on probation, but he said you should be very careful when hiring these people. I mean, one thing that another former police chief told me was that some officers, you know, that maybe they're in a, if they're not successful in a big city, in a bigger urban area that's very busy, where the policing job is very busy, they can be successful in a smaller, a slower Mayberry kind of situation, a smaller town. So that's something to keep in mind as well. One thing I just wanted to mention was that, important to note and with this story is that the number of law enforcement officers in the state of Wisconsin is at its lowest total number in the last 10 years. So we have the smallest amount of law enforcement officers right now than we've ever had in the decade. And that's the same with law enforcement graduates. So just an important piece of context to keep in mind as we look at this issue.
Sure. And what kind of hiring pressure does that put on departments when we have such a small pool in the state?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the question. And I mean, if there are less candidates, it's an employee market. So that could incentivize chiefs and departments to hire. Well, I mean, if they only have one candidate, they need to fill the spot. So, and that's another thing I want to mention is that so when an officer is fired, they often keep their certification, their law enforcement certification. And if a police chief has a choice between hiring someone that already has their certification and hiring a new recruit who they need to pay for to go to law enforcement academy, I mean, for a cash-strapped municipality, it might make sense for them to hire this officer who was fired somewhere else, who maybe wasn't great somewhere else, but they already have their certification, so they're ready to go. They can go right into circulation, start working, as opposed to hiring a rookie who you got to pay for to go to the law enforcement academy. You know, it would take some time before they're ready to start working. So, something else, kind of a pressure on police chiefs, law enforcement agencies, to maybe hire someone that's been fired somewhere else.
We are talking to Peter Cameron right now, investigative journalist and managing editor of the Badger Project. He recently did an investigation looking at the number of police officers who were fired, who are then rehired, and the circumstances involved. I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Henry in Glendale. Hi, Henry.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you.
What did you want to bring up, Henry?
What I want to bring up is I'm glad this is a topic because as a former internal affairs investigator for Chicago, I've learned quite a bit in terms of the process. And I was hoping that part of the study, Peter, could involve identifying a neutral source for investigating as opposed to the department investigating its own. You know, what I found ideally is to have someone who represents the department in that source or committee or whatever form they need to use, but to have it in such a way that individual officers could be evaluated on standards that are, I guess, in a way considered universal as opposed to just local kind of standards. What do you think about that?
Peter, thoughts?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, so this is the most extreme case, but in Wisconsin, for police shootings, there's a law on the books passed, signed into law by Scott Walker, Governor Scott Walker, that mandates an independent investigation must occur when there's a police shooting. So that means, and that means that a separate department needs to investigate the department where the officer came from, so that the department can't investigate itself. Usually in Wisconsin, the Department of Justice investigates it anyway. As far as independent investigations, I mean, fire and police commissions, every municipality has a fire and police commission that is supposed to be, that independent oversight over the police department. Are they truly independent? That's a question that's a lot of people bring that up, that they might be too cozy with the police department. And in Madison, Wisconsin, you saw a change there where the police and fire commission has got a little more independence. But yeah, that's a good question and probably something that needs to happen.
Henry, thank you so much for that call. One issue that I want to get back to, because we were talking about it just a minute ago, which is the certification process and then getting decertified. Now, police officers that are decertified, you know, they cannot rejoin the force. But getting decertified doesn't happen that frequently. But you did write about a couple of instances in Wisconsin where that happened. Can you just set the stage a little so people have some context about how you get to the decertification, how you get to decertification?
Sure. I mean, there were two in the last 18 months or so in Wisconsin, and they both were convicted of felonies. One was convicted of burglary. So that's a pretty cut and dried situation. Another one was on the job and ran a red light, was on his computer in the squad car and T-boned another car and killed a person. So yeah, I mean, if you have a felony conviction in Wisconsin, you cannot be a police officer in Wisconsin. So they were decertified. And I mean, you can just do some Googling and you'll see police officers, law enforcement officers, police officers, jail officers who have been convicted and they lose their they lose their certification. So they can't become police officers anymore. Well, let me say one more thing. There was this is part of the study, but I mean, part of the story, but there was a big study done by the Yale Law Review, and they looked at Florida. They looked at the state of Florida. Very comprehensive study looking at all of the officers in the state of Florida. And they found, probably not surprisingly, but notably because it was a very comprehensive study, that officers who have been fired and then rehired were more likely to be fired again than officers who hadn't been fired. So it's kind of a no-duh situation. But, it's one of the best studies out there. So that's just important to note.
Do you think that there's anything in the works to do a more broad, maybe national study to just see how commonplace these sort of wandering hires are?
I don't know what's happening in academia, but like we said, there at the national level in Congress, there's a lot of efforts to strengthen that national. There is a national registry of decertified police officers, but not all states participate in it. Wisconsin does. But not all law enforcement agencies even know about it, so they don't even know that they can check it. And it's only for decertified officers. It's not for someone that's fired but kept their certification. So there's a lot of potential to strengthen that database. And it's at the national level where it's harder to get things done in Congress.
Peter, before we let you go, we have about 30 seconds left. What are you planning on, investigating or taking a look at next?
Sure. Well, redistricting is coming up. So we're going to be keeping an eye on the gerrymandering process, on the redistricting process. Also doing a lot more with this list of fired officers. So taking a look at that. I just want to mention that. So my organization is the Badger Project. We partnered with Wisconsin Watch, the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, on this story. And the database of these 200 fired or forced out law enforcement officers is available on the Wisconsin Watch website. So you can look at it there. You can download it there. and see the database.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Peter Cameron is an investigative journalist and the managing editor of The Badger Project. That is a nonpartisan journalism nonprofit that covers Wisconsin state government and politics. Up next is news. Then we find out more about the state's hotel industry. I'm J. Carlisle Larson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Eight months into the COVID-19 vaccination effort, the gaps among different racial and ethnic groups in Wisconsin are narrowing. Since June, the rate of Asian, Hispanic, American Indian, and Black residents getting vaccinated has been higher than among white people. In part, that's a result of focused outreach to some minority communities in places like free health clinics and literacy classes for immigrants. Shemaine Mills reports.
For months now, health officials have aimed their efforts at those who want the vaccine or are on the fence.
And we're talking about what we call the unvaccinated but willing. So we're not looking at anti-vaxxers or folks that talk about conspiracy theories and will never have their position changed. We are looking at individuals that for logistical reasons or they haven't been approached in the right manner have not yet gotten access to the vaccine.
That's Joe Agoda, whose nonprofit Sustento is working with 100 free and charitable clinics across 15 states, including Wisconsin. One of them is HealthNet in Rock County. That's where Yolanda Orozco Arellano got vaccinated against COVID-19. The clinic's flexible hours allowed her to get both shots without missing work as a hotel housekeeper in Janesville, where she lives after moving to Wisconsin from Oaxaca, Mexico.
En la mañana. Y pues a veces sí había horario, como en la tarde.
She works in the morning, and she came in the afternoon to get her vaccine here at the clinic.
That's Yolanda's case manager and one of the clinic's interpreters, Alicia Alvarado. She relates how Yolanda wanted to get the vaccine, even though she has other family and friends who were too scared to get a shot, some wrongly believing a myth that involves implanting a microchip, a persistent falsehood that health officials encounter. Yolanda got a shot as soon as she was able. The clinic helped overcome the three T's that HealthNet CEO Ian Hedges says can prevent people from getting vaccinated: transportation, time off, and trust.
For years, healthcare institutions, city governments were maybe not proactively making those relationships. And so when they opened up to the vaccines and then provided maybe some additional resources, and then they said, well, why are folks not coming? Well, it's because those relationships weren't there. That trust wasn't there.
In terms of who people trust, the list often includes their doctor, family members, and teachers like Marie Simpson, who helps immigrants learn commonly used phrases that may be difficult to understand.
The first one is book a flight, book a flight. What does that mean to book a flight?
Buy a plane ticket.
Yes, it means to buy a plane ticket.
For adults learning English as a second language, the bond between student and teacher can be tight because groups like the Literacy Network in Dane County are providing a key skill for those seeking a better life. People like 29-year-old Miguel Marquez, who fled Venezuela to escape poverty and the government of Hugo Chavez. In his literacy class, Miguel also learned about the COVID-19 vaccine, which he didn't think he needed because he was young and healthy. He changed his mind after seeing younger people being hospitalized, some dying.
In that moment, I knew that, oh, that's bad. It's happening. It's actually happening.
Wisconsin is seeing a surge in new infections and hospitalizations driven by the more contagious Delta variant of COVID-19. There's been an uptick in people getting vaccinated, too. In early July, Wisconsin was averaging less than 5,500 new vaccinations per week. That weekly average is now close to 7,500. Health officials say the Delta variant is giving a new urgency to efforts to reach unvaccinated populations. Now that Marquez is protected against COVID-19, he can't understand why some Americans are refusing the vaccine. He says people in his homeland are begging for shots that are hard, if not impossible, to get, often the same vaccine that some Americans don't want. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. 2020 was the worst year on record for the U.S. hotel industry. According to data provider STR, there were more than 1 billion unsold rooms last year, and that crushed the last record set during the Great Recession, when 786 million rooms went unsold in 2009. But there could be some good news on the horizon for Wisconsin's hotel industry. Earlier this month, Governor Tony Evers' administration directed $70 million in grants to nearly 900 hotels in the state to offset lost revenue during the pandemic. Our next guests join us to talk about how their businesses were impacted and take a look at the hotel industry in the state as a whole during the pandemic. And we want to hear from you. Are you a hotel owner? Where's your property? Did you close for a period of time during the pandemic? And what have you seen so far in terms of occupancy this year? Call 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Matt Ranzo is the owner of Thorpe House Inn and Cottages in Fish Creek, which is in the Door County region. Matt, welcome to the morning show.
Thank you for having me on.
And Bill Elliott is president and CEO of the Wisconsin Hotel and Lodging Association. Good morning to you, Bill.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Bill, let's start with you. How are hotels and resorts in Wisconsin doing financially this year compared to last year?
Well, you know, I think that's an interesting question. And to put it in perspective, the answer to that question is better. You know, we're digging out of a big hole that was left last year. But, you know, being better off than last year does not necessarily mean much, depending on what corner of the state you're in and what market you're serving. You know, last year really devastated our industry and put a lot of our businesses at risk. So, there, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into this later, but there are certain parts of the state that are doing very well right now in the leisure market, other parts that are really still struggling to come back. So while they're doing better than last year, oftentimes that still means they're not even breaking even in their expenses. So it's a long road ahead for the entire industry to recover yet.
Well, Bill, let's look at that now. You know, what areas are doing better and, you know, which ones are still behind?
Sure. I think, you know, the data I've seen suggests that the areas that are doing better are really the leisure, that your typical leisure destinations that where families want to hit the road, they can easily drive to. So places like Door County, like Wisconsin Dells, the North Woods, where people can get away and enjoy the great Wisconsin outdoors. Those are the areas where I'm hearing they're having, for the most part, having wonderful summers. That's been what saved a lot of those properties.
Now, Matt, you are in one of those areas that seems to be doing pretty well, and you're open year round, and you have, you know, 6 rooms and 6 cottages. Can you talk a little bit about what your experience was like last year compared to this year?
Sure. Well, we started off the year in January as a normal sort of January and February, and every March and April, we usually do deep spring cleaning of the entire property to get it ready for the high season, which begins in May. So when the pandemic hit in March, we were already working every day cleaning, but it became very challenging because we were not receiving any new reservations for the high season, and we began to receive cancellations, and we rely on those advance deposits as cash flow. So initially it was very difficult. We shut down the main inn, but we were still here working. However, come May, when Wisconsin was open and Illinois and Minnesota was largely closed, there was a flood of people from those states that were seeking to get out and be outdoors. And Door County has a lot to offer in the area of outdoor activities. So we began receiving new reservations, and it never stopped all the way through the summer. Last year actually was our inn's best year historically.
With that in mind, were there any concerns from you and staff about safety during last summer?
Yes, of course. And we instituted all the CDC guidelines, wearing masks, social distancing. Things looked different here for us, but we were able to accommodate the guests that wanted to come. And likewise, my peers and other businesses all instituted those CDC guidelines. We have a high standard for cleanliness on our property, but we increased the disinfecting of surfaces and cleaning of linens, sanitizing of things. So we did make changes for that.
We are talking to Matt Ranzo right now. He owns an inn in Fish Creek. Also with us is Bill Elliott, president and CEO of the Wisconsin Hotel and Lodging Association. And we're talking about the state of the hotel industry in Wisconsin during 2020 and also looking at this year. And we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the industry? How do you think hotels should handle COVID safety protocols? And if you have stayed in a hotel, tell us what your experience was like. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. We're talking about the hotel industry amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Just this month, Governor Tony Evers announced $70 million to be distributed to Wisconsin hotels as part of the American Rescue Plan Act. That was designated for the state's tourism and entertainment industries. And we're joined now by a hotel owner to share their experience and also an expert in the industry. Matt Ranzo, owner of Thorpe House Inn and Cottages in Fish Creek, is with us, and also Bill Elliott, president and CEO of the Wisconsin Hotel and Lodging Association. And you can call in now at 800-642-1234 with your questions about the hotel industry and what, you know, maybe you've gone to one this year. You can call in and tell us about your experience. Now, Bill, let's talk a little bit about that $70 million grant money that the state distributed to hotels. How are hotel owners using this money?
Sure. Well, you know, I've talked to many hotel owners that were very excited to get their hands on these funds. It couldn't have come at a better time for many of them. Hotels, it's kind of like the news. You can't buy yesterday's newspaper. You can't fill yesterday's empty hotel room night. So we've been running on empty for quite a long time in a lot of areas. And a lot of hotel owners have spent their life savings trying to keep their doors open. So just yesterday, I talked to two owners who told me that this money helped them pay their mortgage, sometimes that they're behind on, help them pay their property tax bills. One in one of the more urban areas I talked to yesterday told me that they were on the verge of running out of money. So it was a very welcome infusion of cash for them, just to help them keep their lights on for a while. And that's just where we're at in the crisis right now. I think, like I said before, we're doing better than last year, but we got a long road ahead of us in many areas to dig out. But we're very, very grateful to the governor and the administration for helping our industry with the ARPA funds. Because without it, I think you would see the doors of a lot more properties closing.
Now, Matt, you also applied for several grants to shore up your inn during the pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about that firsthand experience?
Sure. We were concerned, as I said, when the pandemic hit early last year. So I applied for every grant that was offered to me. I applied for the PPP loans, and I applied for the SBA disaster loan. And in the early months, I really didn't know how the rest of the year would go. And thankfully, I did receive several of the grants. I received one from the Wisconsin Department of Administration early on. I also received one from Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And then finally, a couple months ago, I received a Wisconsin Department of Revenue grant. And those grants did help me pay my employees when I wasn't sure, where we didn't have the cash flow coming in.
We're talking to Matt Ranzo, inn owner in Door County, and Bill Elliott. He's the head of the Wisconsin Hotel and Lodging Association. And we are talking about the state of the hotel industry in Wisconsin. Now, Bill, the owner of the Kalahari Resorts in Wisconsin Dells say tourism is bouncing back. And we talked a little bit about that. But do you see a trend right now that that's going to continue, or are we starting to see some more concern on the horizon because of, say, the spread of the Delta variant?
Sure. Well, I think that's certainly something we have to keep our eye on, because first and foremost, we need to keep our employees and our guests safe. But I think there's still a lot of cautious optimism out there. You know, the fall, from what I've heard, going into the next couple months, certainly looks better than last fall, and weekends are still going to be helping us, again, keep our doors open. I think that the real magic question here is, when do business travelers and big groups start coming again? There's very little of that right now. And, you know, I can tell you in the United States, more than 50% of hotel revenues typically come from business travel. So we have a long ways ahead of us to get that back. But I think there's even some cautious optimism around that, in terms of association meetings, smaller business meetings coming in later this fall, early next winter. You know, we'll see that gradually coming back. And, you know, our projections show that we won't be back to 2019 numbers until about 2024. So like I said, we've got some time, but right now, you know, the numbers are going in the right direction in terms of people traveling and people getting out and enjoying Wisconsin again.
Now, going to a hotel right now, Bill, in 2020 or 2021 is a very different experience than prior to the pandemic. Many things that, you know, travelers would have expected, like continental breakfasts, were canceled. Are we seeing any, you know, sort of return to some semblance of normalcy, or are hotels really still trying to play it very safe when it comes to that?
You see some of it coming back, but we are still trying to be very safe. I mean, we take a lot of pride in initiative we put together called the Safe Stay Program. We did that with the American Hotel and Lodging Association, really drove that. But with all the hotel brands, independent hotel ownership groups, and independent scientists and doctors, to really figure out how we can best protect our guests and protect our employees. So, you know, we take that very seriously. And, you know, we understand that our livelihood depends on people being healthy and being able to travel. So first and foremost, that's what's in our focus. And from there, you know, hopefully as we emerge from the pandemic, we'll start to see more and more of those perks coming back.
Now, Matt, you run your own inn. You have these cottages. You've been doing pretty well, all things considered. But are there any challenges that you're still facing, maybe in terms of hiring right now, as you look to 2022?
Yes, that's probably our number one challenge, is staffing. Generally, I employ 2 to 3 full-time innkeepers throughout the year, and we've seen a lot of workers coming and going, and Door County also has a challenge in hiring workers because our median age is near retirement age, so there's not a large pool of working age people. There's also housing challenges in Door County, both affordable housing and just apartments in general. They're hard to come by. So people coming from out of the area that want to work in Door County are having a difficult time of it. So as a business owner, I'm thinking of ways of being more creative. Wages have gone up. I'm considering actually renting an apartment myself and subsidizing it to an employee. You just have to start thinking outside of the box right now. So I am staffed right now, and so I'm thankful for that, but I do have concerns going into the future.
I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Mark in La Crosse. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I travel a lot for business, spent about half the month on the road, and I talked to a number of different hotel managers throughout the country, and they tell me the biggest problem they're having is finding employees to come to work, and that these extended unemployment benefits seem to really be crushing them because they can't get people, they can't get hirees to work at the hotel, and that's the biggest struggle they have. Are your members finding the same problem is what I'm wondering.
So Bill, I'll direct that question to you. Have you been hearing similar issues?
Oh, we certainly have. Besides trying to stay in business for some of our members, hiring employees all over the state is our number one challenge. And the enhancement in unemployment benefits is one of many factors that we know plays into it. Now that ends next month, and from most of the folks that I talk to, they're hopeful it'll help a little bit, but I don't think anybody expects that that's going to solve our problems. There are a lot of factors at play. From people feeling safe to childcare, all of those types of things that we need to fix to get folks back working again. So I think the other piece of it is, with the situation we are thrust into and having to lay off folks eventually, a lot of our workforce has moved on to other industries now, and they've been gainfully employed there. So for a lot of us, we're just starting over in a lot of respects. From a lot of the folks I talk to, I think it's pretty standard now in our industry that about 30% of their positions are still vacant, and we're struggling to find folks to fill them. So that's going to be an ongoing challenge for quite a while. I think the end of the enhancement may give us a small blip and give us some more folks who are ready and willing to work. Again, I think it's going to be a long road ahead of us as we try to navigate that piece of the equation.
Now, Matt, we have about 30 seconds left. What do you hope to get done through the rest of the year as you get ready for 2022?
Well, we hope to finish strong. Our occupancy is up 30% this year over last year, and our revenue is as well. And so I want to finish the year strong, continue to provide a great product to our guests and provide the hospitality that they deserve, and then continue that trend into 2022. I think some of the protocols that we adopted will be in our business for the foreseeable future.
Matt, thank you so much for joining us. And Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Matt Ranzo is the owner of Thorpe House Inn and Cottages in Fish Creek, and Bill Elliott is president and CEO of the Wisconsin Hotel Lodging Association. Just ahead, our next guest has been examining the root causes of anxiety, and we talk more about that in just a little bit. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.